Today's program is brought to you by White Oak Pastures, a five-generation Georgia-based beef and poultry farm determined to conduct business in an honorable manner. For more information, visit whiteoakpastures.com.
Hey, 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 I'm Jimmy Carboni from Beer Sessions Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Carmen DeVito.
And I'm Alice Marcus Krieg.
And we are 150 shows old today.
Yay!
We're going to celebrate with cake.
And get in the ring on the far side is Carmen DeVito.
That's right. Representing Groundworks, Inc., that designs, builds, and maintains gardens around New York, although not this time of year. But the show brings the culture to horticulture. And today's show...
We're talking about culture today.
Yes. What it means to be blue.
January blues.
Yeah, in the horticultural sense. So joining us today... to discuss this topic is garden writer and horticultural taxonomist and frequent guest of the show, Scott Appel. Now, winter is synonymous with the blues.
Yes.
For so many people, there's like the shorter days, the gray skies, the cold, all lend themselves to a feeling of melancholy and a longing for the return of spring and for life. And I don't know how the color blue got such a negative connotation, but as a color, both in my surroundings and in the garden, it's the most peaceful and calming color. My bedroom is painted blue. I love blue.
Blue is amazing. Yeah.
Every bathroom
it's so
I've
tranquil,
ever... It is.
Right.
I mean, every bathroom I've owned, I've always painted some shade of blue.
And uplifting.
Yeah.
You know?
But it's also synonymous with purity.
Right.
The Virgin Mary always had a blue cloak.
Mm-hmm.
The celestial heavens are blue. And, of course, it's associated with water and the sea. And it's my second favorite color after green. And... I found it to be somewhat elusive in the garden. And when people think of flower and plant colors, you don't think of blue. That's not like the first color that comes to your mind.
No, you think of purples.
Oranges, red,
right,
you know.
Pinks, right.
And in nature generally, not just in the horticultural kingdom, I've found that true blue is a little bit exotic. Like parrots are blue.
Right.
But pigeons and sparrows and... robins, they're browns and grays.
Right.
So blue is kind of special.
It's definitely a unique color.
So anyway,
today our horticultural honor roll, also about blue.
Yes.
Is Frances Hodgson Burnett. More than 100 years ago, Frances wrote one of the best-loved children's stories of all times, The Secret Garden. This book has been called one of the greatest children's books of the century, and rightfully so. That book story of the transformational power of nature, friendship, and positive thinking is reason enough to nominate Frances for this. But she also wrote a lesser-known book, now out of print, and that's what we're going to talk about today, The Land of the Blue Flower. This little book is a fairy tale about a young king and the power that a small blue flower has on him and his people. So I'm going to read an excerpt of this book, The Land of the Blue Flower. King Amor planted the seed in a pleasaunce of its own. It grew into the most beautiful blue flower the world had ever known. It was of a blue so pure and exquisitely intense that it was rapture to look at it. Its blossoms hung from a tall stem, and in its first year it gave 1,000 seeds. Each year, Amor planted more flowers, and each year they grew taller and more wonderful and blossomed for a longer time. When the summer wind blew, it shook out clouds of delicate fragrance, which sometimes floated down the mountain until the wretched dwellers in King Mordred's land forgot their quarrels and misery, and even lifted their heavy heads to inhale it, and ask each other what was being done on the mountain. Each year Kingamor gathered the seeds and stored them in an unused tower of his castle. I want to find that tower.
Yeah. So you have to read the book to find out what happens about these magical seeds. But we have somebody pretty magical on the show today to help us talk about blue, the color blue in the garden. And
the good part of the blue.
The good part of the blue. Scott Appel is calling in from Vieques, Puerto Rico, to discuss what makes flowers and plants blue, and also to discuss some great blue flowering plants and how to use them in your gardens to great effect. Scott, welcome back to the show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. It's very kind.
Huh, how blue is the ocean there, Scott, right now?
I'm sorry, I'm having trouble hearing you.
How blue is the ocean right now? Is it beautiful down there?
Oh, it is very beautiful. Of course, when it's stormy, the water is gray.
Yeah.
But we have some of the loveliest colored seas around.
Yeah.
I know. Well, it was actually Scott's suggestion to have this topic. And we're really grateful because we think it's a really good topic for winter. For those of you who don't know Scott, he also goes by the moniker The Green Man. He's a garden writer, horticultural taxonomist, educator, lecturer. He is also a self-professed culinary horticulturist. And he's a trained baker, a chef, and a culinary historian. He combines all of these disciplines into one. He explains to his cooking and gardening students the history of the diverse herbs, fruits, and vegetables used in the kitchen or cultivated in both temperate and tropical gardens. And he is also the author of several books and innumerable articles. So, Scott, let's get into the blues. From a scientific point of view, what is the color blue?
Well, first of all, let me explain what color is. And I'm actually just simply going to read a dictionary definition. Color is the property of light reflecting off a surface as different wavelengths. And these wavelengths in the visible range appear to us as color. Now, please don't even ask me to elucidate on what that means, because it goes right over my head. I'm a simple plant guy, but a professor of art at Rhode Island School of Design, I'm sure, could easily explain it.
Right.
Well, maybe you can explain better. What makes plants or flowers blue? What are the sort of chemicals within the plants that makes them blue?
Well, this is much more tangible and, of course, much more up our alleys, because it's basic biochemistry. Petals have pigments, and pigments are in the vacuole of the cell, of each cell. And these pigments can basically be divided into two groups. One group is called the carotenoids, and they create the yellows, the oranges, and the reds. The other group are the flavonoids, and in particular, in this case, anthocyanin. And that pigment gives us the blues, the greens, and purples. In fact, anthocyanin comes from the Greek word for dark blue flowers. So that word itself is hitting the subject right on the head.
Right. So tell us about the Royal Horticultural Society and their color chart.
Well, it's very interesting. They established a color chart that codified and standardized a system of IDing the color of flowers. So it's pat, just like botanical Latin. When you see a particular color, everyone knows what you're talking about.
Right.
And let me go further into it. We have one here. I've got it in my hand, as you can see. It dates from 1939. But the inception dates back to 69, which I think is quite amazing. It's a bunch of pages with four colors apiece. It's got a grommet, so you can pull one page out at a time. And there are no quaint descriptive names like Robin's Egg Blue out of a Benjamin Moore house paint chart. It's all very, very British. It's all numbers and capital letters,
such as
99A, for example, which is a dark blue. But each entry, each color, or each shade, I should say, has a little hole about the size of a dime. And the idea is you pull up the individual page and you place it over the blossom. And then you literally match up the color.
You know, we need that because we have a client, Scott, and this is exactly what you're talking about. We have a client that is very particular to purples and pinks. And she is insane about us getting the right
purple, yes, the right color.
Because she trolls the website and she says, oh, I want this. And we're like, oh my God, okay.
And she'll say, I want magenta.
How is that looking on your screen versus my screen? And then what's the reality when we show up with what we think matches and then it doesn't match in her mind and in her eye. Right. And so it's like a, you know, she's we're lucky that we have such a particular client. Like, it's actually wonderful that she pays this much attention and she has a great eye because she matches the pinks and the oranges and she likes the clashing colors. And
I'll be at the nursery, Scott, and she'll say, well, what color is it, violet or is it purple?
Yeah. You know, she wants to know the hues and
does the RHS actually sell this chart or is it something that's like no longer?
Yes, you are absolutely precise. Everyone can own one. Ah. All they have to do is look up rhs.org.uk, go to their gift shop, and buy one, and they'll mail it to you.
I'm getting some.
That's awesome. So
we need three. We need one for Alice and I, and then one for her.
For her. And so this is really like the Pantone color chart for flowers.
Yeah, it is.
Yes.
It is very British,
is.
Scott. That's so British.
But of course, if I bred a new Edgerotum, for example, and I described it as having 100, it's the shade of 100A, of course, without the color chart, you wouldn't know what I was talking about.
Right.
So it has a good point, but it's a little difficult in the same token.
But I think it's more precise because it's based on numbers rather than like descriptive, you know, sea blue, you know, like.
Because what does that mean, right? Like, my husband, who's a painter, Scott, as you know, we have arguments about blue and green all the time.
Yeah.
Because
it's subjective.
It's so subjective. And every time I want to repaint a room in the house, I'll want it to be some shade of green. And he'll say, that's a blue. And I'm like, no, that's a green.
Right. Because it's the amount of pigment. Right.
Yes, it is all perceptual.
Yeah.
So that's why plantsmen don't number things. Instead, they name plants. They come up with insane names, Scott, for cultivars of plants. And one of my personal favorites was a coleus named Texas Parking Lot. All right. Now, how does that describe what that is?
Yeah. It is descriptive, but not.
Yes, there might be an odoriferous factor involved as well. I'm not sure.
I think it's describing the plantsman more than the plant, frankly. Anyway, all right. So, interesting. When we were talking about having this show, we talked a little bit about clues, right? There's clues in the botanical names to what kind of blue the plant or flower might be. Can you elaborate a little bit on that, Scott?
Oh, sure. Now, of course, this goes back to our botanical Latin sessions together. As you know, a genus and species, a plant has two scientific names. The species name always modifies or enhances the genus. So let me give you a couple of examples of species names of plants, and we might actually come across them today in our discussions. One of them is Cyaneus. Now, this could be Cyaneus, Cyania, or Cyanium.
Yeah.
Masculine, feminine, or neutral, depending on the genus. But Cyaneus is clear, bright blue. An unusual one is Indigoticus. That's a mouthful. It's actually based on the word indigo.
Indigo, right.
And that's the deepest blue. Another one is Ceruleus, which is lighter and duller than Indigoticus. I mean, this is how it's written. It's very funny. Azureus, light, pure, lively blue. and Violaceus, violet blue.
Yeah.
So species names can clue you in when you know the right words. And you don't even have to see the flower. You know automatically. And that doesn't hold... That's not just about blue flowers. It's about all flower colors.
So tell us some of your favorite blue plants, Scott.
Well, I think one right out of the book from which you read, and we must discuss it.
Yes.
Is Mechanopsis, and that's the blue poppy. And it sounds, but as you described it, right from your reading, from your plant collector's session, I'm sure you talked about Ernest H., quote-unquote, Chinese Wilson.
Yeah.
And he discovered the plant in the early 1900s. He was actually looking for a different species, which is yellow. But he came across this one and collected it from the alpine areas of the Himalayas and brought it back to England, brought seeds back, and got them to bloom, and they caused an absolute...
Scott, are you with us?
Show.
Okay.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes,
it cut out for a minute. Yeah, it cut out for 1 second.
We heard you say that it was an absolute sensation.
It was a sensation because no one had ever seen it. People had seen violets, people had seen pansies, and of course delphiniums, but this shade of blue knocked everybody's socks off. And it is a pure, wonderful sky blue on 5 foot tall plants. But it's really difficult to grow. That's the bad part about it. Now, Alice, you didn't know Carmen and I then, but she and I worked together at Smith & Hawken, and we sold Mechanopsis seeds.
Oh, wow.
It was a very big deal. And, of course, we sold them knowing full well they would never grow in New York.
Yeah,
it was just too hot.
Yeah.
But this genus, and there are many species all with blue flowers, does very well on the West Coast, California, the Pacific Northwest.
Right.
And, they'll get 5 feet tall, and they're perennial, by the way, and they're self-seeding. 4 feet tall and sky blue flowers in spring and early summer. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
So did it do well in England? I would imagine cool weather, mild winters.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, he got them to bloom for the Chelsea Garden Show. So yes, England is more like California than New York.
Right.
So
they do a much better job.
Yeah, that's so interesting, Scott. And I bet that Frances Burnett, who was English, and was... I think she's probably a contemporary of Wilson because she was born in the mid-1850s or 60s. The blue flower she's talking about coming from an emperor's garden is probably that poppy, I would guess.
It could be. It's a lightly subject or a lightly candidate, certainly.
Is it fragrant? I don't know if...
No.
No.
No, poppies really are not fragrant. No. They are beautiful, but not fragrant.
Well, she just added some literary, she added some literary flourish to the flower.
Well, maybe it was lavender.
It could be.
You know, or maybe it could have been a syringa, could have been a lilac.
Yeah, it'd be interesting.
That's a lot of fragrance.
I was wondering if it made that much of a cultural sensation at the time, wow.
Yes.
That's a dissertation.
Yeah, right there.
But people were familiar with lilacs, don't forget. They were old school by then.
Yeah, true. True.
This was a brand new plant to
them in
1902, 1903.
Right.
So have you tried to grow it, Scott?
No. Never in New York, and certainly not down here.
No, too hot.
Grew lots of tropical blues, certainly, but not that. It wouldn't do it.
So is there one question? Is there a family, Scott, of plants that lend themselves more to the blue color range?
Well, there are a couple. Yes. Well, two come to mind right off the bat. One of them is the Boragdonaceae.
Wait, hang on.
Wait, can you speak up? Yeah.
One of them is the Boraginaceae.
Boraginaceae.
The family of borage, Borage officinalis.
Okay,
borage. We know that as an annual herb garden plant with starry blue flowers that fade to pink over a couple of days.
Uh-huh.
And people in Renaissance England, in fact, thought it was so sprightly that just looking at it would relieve melancholy. It has many, many cousins that have blue flowers. Another herb you might be familiar with, certainly, is the genus Symphytum comfrey, has blue flowers. Sort of stigma.
Hmm.
So
it's interesting that those are all medicinals too. Right?
Yeah.
Yes. Well, there's lots that aren't. Brunera macrophylla.
Yeah.
Siberian blue claw, blue gloss. Well, you know, that's not medicinal.
No.
But I was going to say our own, meaning your own, Virginia bluebells, Hortensia virginiana. That's a lovely shade of blue in early spring. Mm-hmm. And forget-me-nots, don't forget those, and pulmonaire.
Yeah.
Pulmonaire. And we talked about herbs a bit, Scott, in our preview discussion. Rosemary.
Mm-hmm.
Quite a few of the herbs have blue flowers, right?
Well, a particular family, the second family I was thinking of for, that are prone to blueness, I suppose, is the Lamiaceae.
Yes.
That's the mint family.
Yes.
You know, mint has blue flowers.
Yes.
Sort of hyssop. That's
yeah.
sort of catnip. Sort of rosemary.
Right.
Sort of thyme.
Yeah.
And just by fluke. And sort of salvia. Salvia officinalis has blue flowers.
Yeah. I love that salvia. I it's just exquisite when you see it in bloom. It's exquisite.
And salvia. Which is the salvia that we always plant for Myra, Alice? That's the Mexican salvia. Farinaceae? Is it that is a
oh.
super late blooming one, Scott?
But that's more on the purple.
Yes.
Well, Farinaceae, that's the mealy cup sage. That would bloom from, you know, early spring. It's an annual, number one.
Yes.
And it would bloom continually all summer long. I think what you're thinking of is Mexican sage, and that blooms really almost before frost.
Yes.
Right at
yeah.
the end
yeah.
of the season.
It's furry. And it's
furry, but it's on the purple
it
side.
It is on the purple side. That
yeah.
is true.
Yeah. Well, we have to take a break, Scott. Hang on. We've got tons more questions for you. Stay on the line. We're talking about blue plants with Scott D'Appel on We Dig Plants, Heritage Radio Network.
Today's break song is by me, and it's called Balloons by Jack Inslee. This is We Dig Plants on Heritage Radio Network.
White Oak Pastures is the only farm in the United States that has its own USDA-inspected red meat abattoir or slaughterhouse and its own USDA-inspected poultry abattoir or slaughterhouse. We partner with Whole Foods to deliver our high-quality meat and poultry from Miami, Florida, all the way to Princeton, New Jersey. One family, one farm, five generations, 145 years. A full circle return to sustainable land stewardship and humane animal stockmanship. For more information, please visit our website, whiteoakpastures.com.
Hi, welcome back to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. We are here with Scott D'Appel, botanical taxonomist, discussing the color blue in plants and in flowers. And Scott's going to give us some more tongue-twisting names in a minute, which I always mispronounce and thoroughly embarrass myself. Okay, so Scott, let's get into adding blue, some more categories of blue flowers. When I think of blue, I think of perennials and bulbs. That's what, like, because I think of blue as
an accent?
As an accent.
Focal point.
Yeah, and also as an early blooming thing. And that's probably wrong, but I think of like bluebells and bulbs. Can you discuss some of the best plants in the perennial and bulb category for temperate gardens that have blue flowers?
Scott?
First.
Okay.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah,
yep. Mm-hmm. Perfect.
Okay. Well, of course, we have the ornamental aliens. There's many species of those. And, of course, they're not really very early. They're really June, sometimes even July.
Yeah.
The United States or the mainland states has a native bulb, eastern woodland bulb, called Camassia quamash. And that has 2.5-3 foot spikes of blue flowers also later in the season. In fact, the bulb is edible and was used by Native Americans. But of course, as far as early bulbs go, you know, Chiantoxa, all of the blue crocus species,
yeah,
the Dutch hybrids, which are much later, Hyacinthioides, which is formerly Scylla,
uh-huh,
and of course the genus Hyacinthus,
mm-hmm,
classic blue,
yes,
Muscari,
yeah,
Pushkinia,
yeah,
you know, Scylla.
Yeah.
There's Scylla peruviana, which is not hardy, but it would make a great blue flowering container plant.
Yeah.
There's Agapanthus, which I adore, which is illegal to grow in California now because it's so invasive by seed, but that would make a good tub plant or conservatory, you know, or
sunny
window in the wintertime.
Yeah.
Yeah, Alice loves that plant.
I love that plant.
It's a great, we've used it
in
some gardens, and I think it's perennialized here in a couple of gardens. For example, on the West End Avenue, those have come back.
Really?
Well, yeah. You know, with global warming, there are hardier selections. But yeah. I'll tell you, with global warming, things are perennializing that really shouldn't.
Yeah.
Now, that's a mixed blessing, obviously.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And let's talk about some perennials that are known for their blue color. Geraniums come to mind for me. The crane's bills are all in the kind of blue-purple category.
Yes. Yes, many are. Of course, this is the genus geranium,
yes,
not the common name geranium, which is the genus Pelargonium, even though they belong to the same family. But there's a great cultivar called Johnson's Blue, which is intensely blue and long flowering and about a foot and a half tall.
Uh-huh.
I'm very fond of Aconitum, the monk's hood.
Yeah.
Aconitum napellus. And those are also very late, very tall. They do need staking. But terrific dark blue flowers. And if you cut them, they will rebloom. And simple things like even Ajuga reptans.
Yeah, I love Ajuga.
Which,
yeah,
of course, you know, is a little mundane, although there are some really nice variegated cultivars. They have blue flowers. And variegated foliage and blue flowers, to me, is a great combination.
Right. And lupins.
Lupins,
yes, they're all blue. Yes. And don't forget all the campanulas.
Yeah.
There are so many species of campanulas, and of course we know them as bell flowers and harebells. Campanula Carpatica, Carpathian harebell, Lactiflora, the milky bell flower, Latifolia, the great bell flower. You can have blue flowers using that genus alone.
Right.
From spring to fall. And people, it's such a large genus, people specialize in collecting them. It's very interesting. One excellent one, which is right up Dan Hinckley, formerly of Heronswood Alley, is Corydalis flexulosa, from China, and it's in its own family, the Fumariaceae. And it's a foot tall. It blooms early spring, so it'll bloom with spring bulbs, also things like bleeding heart. It's related to that, as a matter of fact. Intensely blue flowers, a little nodding racemes, and tender fern-like foliage, very sweet.
Oh, that sounds,
and then don't
that
forget,
sounds good. That sounds actually very... Did Dan find it? Did he?
He discovered several. In fact,
wow.
Well, we just got a letter from him for Christmas, and he's still plant hunting, believe it or not.
Good, yeah. Well, he's working for Monrovia now, right? I think.
I don't know.
I think they're sponsoring him.
I don't know.
Yeah. You know, Scott, we'd love to put some links and some pictures of these plants that you're talking about on our Facebook fan page.
Yeah.
So we will do that. We'll do that for our listeners afterwards.
So they can see.
What they look
like. Yeah, exactly.
So tell us some more of your favorites. This is so fun. I love this topic.
Let's get into tropicals,
well,
Scott.
Yeah, tropicals.
That's your world now, you know, tropicals.
Well, that's how I live now, are tropicals. You know, I've got, as I'm sitting here, I'm sitting on my side porch, and I've got a big terracotta saucer pot full of Streptocarpella sexorum,
oh my God,
which is a Gessneria, so it makes it a African violet kind of thing, and it's about 3 feet long. It's on a pedestal covered with tubular blue flowers.
Oh,
it's exceptional.
So beautiful.
But where you are, you have to grow it, you know, as an animal.
Yes,
yeah.
and kill it indoors.
Yeah.
Streptocarpella. I've tried to grow that so many times. I'm actually kind of a sucker for Streptocarpus as well, Scott, you know, the bigger flower. And every time I see them, I see them in the nurseries and I buy them and I...
We use them in containers.
As annuals,
for
seasonal.
And they're amazing.
Yeah, you know? They just don't...
They pay the rent.
Yeah, for a little while.
For the summer, they pay the rent.
But
they're
then when it gets hot and humid,
I think they
just start to fry. But they're great.
They are great. And, you know, down here, I have a ground cover of blue African violets. Of course, it's not treadable. You cannot walk upon it.
Yeah.
But it's all a solid carpet. Now, how nifty is that?
Yeah, that's...
Of course...
I'm so envious.
Know, of course... Julia Primera, the cat, likes to sleep on it, though, because it's so soft, so there is some drawbacks. But we have a wonderful shrub. It's called Clerodendron ugandense, meaning from Uganda. It's a shrub. Each flower has two shades of blue, pale blue and even paler blue. It's called the Blue Glory Bower. And it's in constant bloom, and it's the only blue-flowered example in the genus. We grow a great semi-vine called Petria volubilis, and it's very stiff, sort of sandpapery, dark green leaves, but long, stiff spikes of starry, light blue flowers all year long, and it just goes on and on.
So let me ask you this. This is kind of a esoteric, obscure question, Scott. Why is blue so difficult to find? I mean, you and I just, you know, we just ran through this huge list of plants, but comparatively, these are unique compared to other colors. Why?
Well, you know, I'm going to guess.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you an educated guess. Remember what flowers are for. They're for reproduction.
Right.
We grow them because they're pretty. For the plant, it's how they reproduce. And most plants, actually all plants, are pollinated by creatures. The only plant not to be pollinated by a living creature are the grasses. They're wind-pollinated. But each flower acts like a little landing strip, and insects see with different eyes than we do.
Right.
So the flowers don't appear to them as we see them,
right.
And they look like little landing strips, like here, land here, come hither.
Right.
And blue on the ultraviolet spectrum might appear, who knows, bright red or speckled or something with lines saying, you know, land this way, like an airline, like an airport.
Yeah.
That's what I'm guessing. But it's got to have something to do with pollination.
Right, yeah. So maybe it's a difficult color for insects and animals to see. You know, maybe blue is a difficult color compared to the other colors.
The yellows and the reds and oranges and that other end of the spectrum.
For example, look at hummingbirds. Birds have color vision just like we do.
Right.
Blue is not their favorite color.
No. No.
They like red and yellow and orange first.
Right.
Yellow and blue are their least favorite.
Right.
And you can see them in action here because we have tons of hummingbirds. So there is something about it.
Right.
Wow.
Is there an area in the world that is more prone to blue flowers?
Ooh.
To the blue pigments? I got my brain on today.
That's a really great question, and I cannot answer that.
I was just wondering
Well, you know, I'm going to say the Mediterranean, because of all the herbs with blue flowers that come from there.
Yeah.
The Mediterranean, I bet North Africa, the Canary Islands, which has echium with 10-foot spikes of blue flowers. We didn't discuss that. I would think that area just has more because of the plant families that are exemplified there.
Right. What a fun topic this has been.
Well, let's talk. Let's get into the utilitarian aspect, right, too, because we want to share. You had some great. You've gardened for so many years, Scott. You have great advice on how to use blue in the garden. What other color families blue flowers work well with? Can you get into that a little bit?
Yes. Well, of course, red is usually partnered with blue because it's a complementary color and it's a really high impact color combination. But when I think of red and blue, I always think of white.
Yeah.
And I think of red, white, and blue. And that...
That makes you
want to
barf.
A harbinger of taste, but it doesn't really turn me on. But for public plantings like Carnegie libraries, government buildings, I think it's absolutely perfect combination. And of course, if folks like it, it's their garden.
Right.
But let's take white. White goes with blue. White goes with every color.
Right.
And blue and white is a very aqueous combination and very cooling and calming. And blue and white would be a great combo for, let's say, a beachside garden where it's always going to be hot and it's your summer residence. It would cool you off just looking at it, so to speak.
Yes.
But, you know, I have other more interesting ideas. What about gray? I like blue and gray.
Yeah.
Now, there really aren't, I can only think of one gray flower. And that really would be Edelweiss, and that's far too difficult to grow. So we need to look at leaves.
Yeah.
Gray foliage and use foliage as an accent. And we can think of a bunch of them. Senecio.
Yeah.
Those are the Dusty Millers.
Yeah.
Santalina.
Yeah.
Artemisia.
Mm-hmm.
Artichokes and cardoons. Now they're big.
Yeah.
But they would certainly go with really tall delphinium hybrids, blue delphiniums. We think of Heliochrysum petiolare,
right,
the licorice plant.
Right.
Rutu graveolens.
Yeah.
Once again, the salvias and all the herbs.
Yeah.
Also one of my favorites, lamb's ears.
Yeah.
Bacchus byzantina.
Yeah.
You know, that has great furry gray leaves. Of course, it has pink flowers. And you can either leave them or pick them,
right?
You know, depending on how you feel.
Yeah, that's a great combo. I actually have that combo in my garden, Scott. I have, I have a lot of alliums, and then I have the Stachys, the Helichrysum, and the Santalina.
Yeah,
and it's a great combination. Of course, I'm always ripping out the Stachys and like putting it outside in pots for my neighbor.
yeah, it grows. It's
so aggressive, and I have to confess, I pick off the pink flowers because I don't like them.
Yeah, but I love.
They are messy.
I like blue and purple together, and like the magentas and the blues together.
Uh huh. Well, and that's a good segue to my next. I'm talking about my favorites.
Yeah.
So I like black and blue.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that sounds awfully sadomasochistic, but I think it's an over-the-top combination. And we're talking about black flowers. Of course, most of them aren't really black, but as you just mentioned, Alice, most of them are super dark purple or super dark wine red,
right?
Almost bordering on black. And that's, to me, a stellar combination. Now, one truly black flower is Helleborus Black Beauty. And, of course, you know how early they bloom, and that would be quite stellar with early blooming blue-flowered bulbs.
Mm-hmm.
Another couple are Dianthus Black and White Minstrels, black and white flowers. A couple of poppies, Papaver's omnifera, black swan and black peony.
Mm-hmm.
Even petunia has black cat and sophisticata blackberry. But even more interesting, I think we should start doing what the French have been doing for centuries, and that's having a potager, which they combine edible plants with flowers so they get the benefits of both worlds. So I suggest you get and put in black-fruited eggplant. And the black fruit acts as an ornament against the blue flowers. Of course, you pick the black fruit, of course, and eat it, but it produces fruit all season long.
Right.
And if we're going to use eggplant, want to use some of the heirloom black-fruited tomatoes. Once again, you get to pick the tomatoes, but it's the fruit
right.
that is the color companion to the blue flowers.
Right.
Then
right.
there's a couple of black hot peppers, believe it or not.
Oh, yes.
Short plants.
Yeah.
Yep.
Short plants. And black fruit. One of them is royal black with black fruit.
Uh-huh.
Another one is black pearl, and the leaves themselves are almost black.
Uh-huh.
Yes, we love to use those ornamental black peppers. They've become very popular as a kind of season extender here, Scott.
Yeah.
So if you don't want to if you don't want to do kale, which is like sometimes so gross, but we'll do sometimes like
the heucheras.
Heucheras in the fall.
Obsidian.
With the black peppers.
Yeah.
And you also, there's some other, isn't there like a black corn or a broom corn, sorghum?
Right.
That's
well, yes, we know sorghum. Amish use it for making sorghum syrup. There's a cultivar. It's called broom, the common name is broom corn. It's called Texas black.
Uh-huh.
It's 8 to 12 feet tall and has huge panicles of black seeds. So you can put that at the back of the border for height and get black, the black color black, up in the air, so to speak.
Right.
And, of course, you can use it for dried arrangements. You can leave it for the birds and feed them.
Yeah.
But all those plants with blue flowers, I don't know, pretty stellar.
Yeah.
I really want to incorporate a lot more black. You and I were talking about that in the garden this year.
I like the black chartreuse combo.
Yeah, that's a great combo. Yeah. And you have another favorite, Scott, another favorite combo that goes with blue, the greens, right?
Well, my favorite is blue and green. They're my favorite colors. My whole life. In fact, next to that blue Strepsocarpella I just mentioned, I've got a green flowered Dendrobium orchid. And which is chartreuse. So the chartreuse next to the blue is beautiful.
Can you
I grow orchids outdoors.
Yeah.
So it's really terrific. But let's look at some green flowers. Once again, back to Helleborus. Helleborus viridis. There's a name, viridis. It means green.
Mm-hmm.
And Argutifolius and their hybrids and cultivars, pure green flowers. Once again, to go with early blooming blue bulbs would be very pretty. All the hosta cultivars in their various shades of variegated foliage, and, of course, most of them have blue flowers themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Alchemilla, lady's mantle,
mm-hmm.
the annual bells of Ireland,
mm-hmm.
Molucella levis, I love that, together with blue flowers. And it's a tall spike, as you know, so you get that linear vertical verticality to the garden. Simple flowers like zinnia, double and single envy, and the new tequila lime.
Yeah.
Then Nicotiana, the flowering tobaccos. One of them is called lime green. It's been around forever. And the species Nicotiana langdorfii, which has green and black flowers.
Yeah.
They're small and graceful racemes. So that would be lovely. Look at the mundane coleus. You can buy coleus by the pack with named cultivars, not just in mixtures anymore. So you can pick all kinds of shades of green to plant with your blue flowers.
Yeah.
Palladium.
Yes.
Calla Green Goddess. I love that.
Uh-huh.
And it would be lovely.
And that Ophiopogon.
Or in addition, back
the black
I beg your pardon?
The black Ophiopogon.
Oh, yes, absolutely. That would be terrific to go in the black department. Once again, to the potager idea, how about heirloom green tomatoes or green striped, tiger striped tomatoes
mm-hmm.
or tomatillos or the green fruited eggplant?
Yeah.
Or how about herbs? Large leafed basil. In fact, how about large leafed purple basil with blue?
Yeah.
Or how about fennel? And in that case, how about bronze fennel to go with the blue?
Yeah.
Of course, it's not green, but put herbs in there and keep the flowers deadheaded, and then you have edible herbs to cook with and the green foliage to complement your blue flowers.
Scott, you're getting me so excited for the planting season. I
know. Well, the idea of the potager is really great. And I remember, Scott, you mentioned Smith and Hawken. When we were working there decades ago, the French potager was a big thing. And I remember Smith and Hawken was all obsessed about the garden at Villandry. Do you remember that, Scott? And it was like...
Yes.
They were constantly...
Yes, that was Louis XIV.
Yeah.
And the garden at Versailles.
Yeah, and his potager there, mm-hmm. and how beautiful it was. And I think the trend now with people growing more of their food, and people are always talking about how to, you know, incorporate the edibles into their gardens and without making them look messy, that's the perfect solution.
Yeah.
You know, blending flowers and vegetables, which is not a new idea.
No.
You know, it's a very old idea and a very practical idea. It's a great way to do it. So we're going to share, some of your list with appropriate photos, all this week,
yeah.
with our listeners, to showcase your ideas and how to blend black and blue and green, mm-hmm. blue and grays, uh-huh. you know, maybe some red, white and blue too. A little patriotism
sure.
isn't bad.
Yeah. Sure.
So can you tell us briefly, Scott, what else you're working on in the next few months?
As far as my home project?
Yeah. Yeah, we always like to hear what you're up to. I know you're coming to New York to visit us.
Yes, you know, I know you're going to smack me through the telephone. I got up this morning, and I felt so chilly. It was 68.
Well, I have to say, Scott, the weather gods are with you, because I was looking at the long-range forecast, and it's going to be unseasonably warm in the mid-40s.
Oh, well, that's a blessing.
I'm just saying, we are trying. We are trying our best.
Right, Scott, I've got one last question for you concerning blue.
Okay.
If you could propagate any flower into a blue color, what would it be?
Good question.
Huh.
I know this is off the cuff.
There was the movie The Blue Dahlia.
Right.
I would want a true blue orchid that I could grow here. Because orchids can be really deep purple and almost red and almost maroon.
Right.
But there's no true blue tropical orchid. There are hardy blue ones, like Orchis maculata, all over Italy and the Mediterranean, but no tropical blues. And I think that would be good. And that would be a huge undertaking, because they're so difficult to propagate from seed.
Right.
Yeah, their pollen is like dust, isn't it, Scott? Most orchids' pollen is very tiny.
Yes. You grow them under sterile conditions. Right. It's very complex.
Wow.
Well, Scott, you've given us a ton to think about, and we're very excited to see you next week.
And thank you for sharing so much with our audience. And we'll have to come up with another juicy topic to have you back on in the next season. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thanks for joining us, Scott.
Thank you so much. Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Enjoy that streptocarpus.
Well, Alice and I, we have just a few minutes. We just wanted to remind everyone that Landrit Seed Company, the oldest seed house in America, is our giveaway sponsor of all month for the month of January. Last week's winner was Julie Hill from Greenville, South Carolina. So how do you enter? You have to become our friend on Facebook. So please do that. Groundworks, Inc., We Dig Plants is the Facebook page. Our show was produced by Carmen DeVito and Alice Marcus Krieg, and engineered by Jack Inslee. Please join our Facebook page. I can't say it enough.
Win some swag. Thanks for joining.
See you in the garden.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.